Hello again, witches, seekers, and friends, and thanks for tuning in to episode 36 of the Fat Feminist Witch Podcast, the show where we do a little ranting, raving, and wand waving. Today's episode, Grounded in Reality, is all about the Instagram witch, ways that science and magic can and do come together, and how to inject your highly witchy spiritual energy into this very bizarre, logic-driven, and tech-based reality that we live in. Welcome to October, witches! Are y'all ready to get spooky? I'm ready to get spooky. I am so excited that fall is here and that Halloween is on its way. Like, I'm fully in. My Halloween decorations have started coming out of hibernation and my house is slowly just getting a little bit spookier. I've also been lighting candles and incense to invite some real spirits and ghosts into my life for the month. My noni, my grandmother, has been, I don't know, off doing other things, I guess. And I'd like a visit. So I've got my favorite picture of her on my desk with a candle lit and some crystals surrounding it. And I'm just like totally in my element. I actually posted a picture on my Instagram account if you guys want to see it. So every October on the podcast and the blog, I pick a different facet of the myths and legends and stereotypes associated with witchcraft and examine how they've influenced our modern views on witchcraft and magic and on witches themselves. So in the very first very fat feminist Halloween special in 2016, I talked about the true classics, the flying brooms, the Eye of Newt, Macbeth's witches, green skin, black cats, the whole deal. And then last year, I changed it up a little bit, and I talked about Victorian spiritualism. So we talked about Harry Houdini, seances, and mediumship, and paranormal mysteries. This year, we're moving even further forward in time to right now. Right now! The time we're in. So all month, I'll be exploring and honoring real witches and the ways that they all kind of seamlessly destroy and also work with and breathe life into the stereotype of the Halloween witch. So today, we're going to be talking about when the supernatural world of witches mixes with our rational world of science and technology, and how we navigate that fine line between magic and reality. But before we jump in, I want you to ask yourself a question that is seemingly pretty simple. And the question is magic real? And furthermore, does that matter? Keep it in your head. We're going to come back to that later at the end of the episode. So let's start with our newest witch stereotype or archetype, depending on your perspective, the Instagram witch or the aesthetic witch. The Instagram witch practices and approaches magic from a different place. Their magic is art and their art is magic. They've awakened ancient systems of magic that have long been forgotten or more appropriately ignored by the dominant culture, even the dominant witch culture. They're open about their practice, often sharing their, you know, their divinatory readings, their spells, and even pages of their grimoire with their coven of hundreds of followers or even hundreds of thousands of followers. The neon signs boasting psychics in the windows of nondescript houses of my youth have been replaced with neon fonts in flashing GIFs or Instagram stories that are advertising readings and spells right on my tiny little phone. But is every Instagram witch really a witch? Is every artist making moonstone jewelry or drawing their own tarot decks a magical practitioner? In fact, I mean, is any of this real? Is any of this real witchcraft? Are these real witches? Lately, the idea of aesthetic or Instagram witchcraft is a bit of a tough or confusing topic for a lot of people. As always, there's a crop of, you know, elder practitioners that are shaking their fists and telling those damn kids that they had to trudge 20 miles in the snow uphill both ways just to get to Sabbat rituals in the woods at midnight. And goddess damn it, that's the way it should be. But there's another voice in the crowd asking, is this really what we want witchcraft to be in general? Another hallmark of this kind of witchcraft is its beauty. Artistically produced and edited photographs capture expensive crystal collections, gigantic cauldrons filled with arcane herbs, and all new divinatory methods or tarot decks surrounded by flower blossoms and shiny Lemurian point crystals. None of them feature exploded or blackened candle holders, house fires, which totally happens, dusty altars or dusty collections of magic books, or a single crystal even out of place in their grid. I often find myself looking at a photo and wondering what happened to all of the herbs, candles, and offerings after the photo was taken. Was all that stuff really used in ritual? Was it just thrown out? Did you ruin a bunch of flowers just to take this photo to seem witchy? And again, does that actually matter? And I mean, look, friends, I run a witchy business. You're listening to it. And I use Instagram and I like it. When I take a picture of my altar, I sweep up fallen ashes, I replace burnt out candles, I tidy it up a little bit, you know, and make sure I get the best light and angle, and then oftentimes I'll use a filter on it afterwards just to make it look cool. When I do share spells that I'm doing, I often withhold details or items from the photo just because it still feels like very private. I don't always really elaborate about the specific intentions of my candles or my spells or my mojo bag. I'll just say, you know, for protection, for love, for money, whatever. I've also set up witchy things just for photographs. I'm not afraid to admit that, though I probably would have been before. My house is filled with witchy things. I've gathered them up and I've taken photographs, and I'm not actually using any of those things in this moment. I decided it would be a really cool photo, and I took the picture. Now, I might not have admitted that before recently. I was a guest on the New World Witchery podcast, and the host, Corey, brought up Instagram witches and this aesthetic issue. And since then, the topic hasn't really left my mind. As a visual person who really loves art, I follow and I really enjoy a lot of accounts and artists who post art or photos with an occult or a witchy theme. Many of them are real witches. Others are artists who are inspired by magic and the occult, which is like pretty much 90% of the world's greatest artists. By the way, it's always different religions or different occult practices, but so many artists are very inspired by this. But they don't practice themselves. Others aren't spiritual at all, but have found strength in the archetype of the witch and use her energy and imagery in their fights for feminism and other social justice causes. Not all of them are witches, but because I'm a witch, all of it speaks to my own views and feelings about magic. Whether or not they are a practitioner, I can get magical inspiration from it. Whether or not they're genuinely practicing, I can see that photo of their altar and I can say, wow, this looks really beautiful. Look at this kind of energy that I'm, you know, feeling looking at all of these items. This is a kind of energy I would really like to harness for myself. But there are also times when I'm scrolling through those witchy posts on social media and it makes me and my practice feel, you know, teeny tiny small and very inadequate. I feel very envious of, like, especially like gigantic crystal pieces or like big crystal collections of various large crystals. Like, a lot of mine are pocket sized because I like to carry them around with me. I like them to fit in my hand. But I have to admit that some of those gigantic amethysts and smoky quartz, the giant clusters and points, are so incredible. I feel envious of all the really, really interesting herbs. I know I watch Madame Pamita's YouTube account. I don't watch a lot of YouTube, but I really, really like hers. And I often find myself very jealous of all the really interesting herbs that she uses and she has access to in her practice. And I know that she sells a lot of that stuff and she probably didn't always have access to it, but still I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh, I wish I had this herb collection. It kind of makes me feel guilty for not pouring as much financial support into, my own practice, and then B, all of those cool indie witch creators that I love and follow. I wish I could spend all sorts of money to buy all of the crystals and incense and t-shirts and witchy tools and pins and patches and stuff that these wonderful witchy creators online are creating, but I can't afford it. Financially, I can't do that right now. And that makes me feel kind of bad, and it's not their fault, but it does. And there have definitely been times when I've considered sharing a photo of something that I'm doing or a part of my genuine practice, and then I think of all of the beautiful and the glossy images I see all the time. I mean, it looks like everybody has their own witch magazine and is constantly doing photography for it. And I've reconsidered posting my tiny little things. And I mean, that's not just me thinking, well, my silly picture won't get enough views or likes, as if it's not going to further my business. It's more like I don't think that this photo will really resonate with the majority of witches on this platform. This won't be something that will help me connect because it looks different. It doesn't look the way people are expecting. This isn't the kind of witch I want people to see me as. I want to connect with these other people. My witchcraft specifically is so entwined with my overall identity that seeing a million witches doing what I want to be doing and sharing a kind of practice that I only wish that I could have is sucky. Sucky. And of course, I know this isn't very rational and that it's not the intention or even the fault of the creators of the images. Everybody has self-esteem issues sometimes. They're just trying to reach out, to share, and to connect, just like me. But it does make you think who you might be reaching with your digital witch portfolio and what kind of energy that it puts out there or that it attracts. The argument that the current trend of very glitzy and elaborate witch setups aligns our spiritual practice too much with capitalism and consumerism is, I think, a valid criticism. That doesn't mean you need to like hand make every single witch thing that you own, but consider how much money you've spent on the items you're using for the spell or that you have on this altar right now. Consider how much you're actually using those items. An expensive cauldron that sits on your altar that goes forever unused in real ritual, but is filled with items and herbs and smoke and incense in all of your photos on Instagram because it looks witchy, is just performance art. It's just witch-themed performance art at that point. It's a stock photo. If you take it a step further and in your little description, describe your favorite ways to use your cauldron that you've plucked from a Tumblr post, now you're just selling me a cauldron. You've created an ad for this cauldron and for witchcraft in general, but are spinning it to me like it's real. And this is the opposite of what magic and spirituality are about for me. For me, magic and my spiritual journey and witchcraft, this is a tool that I use for seeking truth in general, for seeking truth about myself, the world, the universe, other people, you name it. Seeking truth and finding lots of pretty ads can be a very hollow experience, especially if you're not necessarily aware that what you're looking at is a fabricated image or an ad. I've been thinking about that nonstop. And I started to wonder what would happen if I really did share real pictures. I mean, what would happen if I shared a picture of my messy altar where, you know, there's a little ashtray on it that has old, lifesavers, my coffee cup sitting there. You know, what would happen? Are people going to say you're not a real witch? They're going to stop following me forever? I don't really think so. And if they do, maybe I didn't want them to follow me so much in the first place. So this month, I created a small photo or writing challenge, if you like, but it's more like a fun game and something that we can connect using. So I love all of the beautiful artistic and aesthetic photos on Instagram. I want to reiterate that. I love them. I love art. I love photography. I love anything that's very witchy. And some of that stuff is just absolutely beautiful. Even some witches who are, you know, taking the photos specifically for promotional purposes, they just completely wow me because it's such a wonderful, like, great composition and color and style, and they're using really incredible materials. I love it. But I'd love to see real witchcraft as well. So it started on October 1st, just a few days ago, and the first day we shared pictures of altars. Share a picture of your altar in its current state, and its size, and with all of the items that are already on it, and the results were really, really great. every altar in the tag was different. Some people posted different pictures of many different altars that they have through their house. A lot of them featured natural or fallen elements that weren't actually purchased at a store, but that they found. Some were very, very small. Some didn't even have items on them that screamed witch. They had, you know, just a nice scented candle and some nostalgic type items, some photographs, and they were on a dresser. So it was so different every time. Others were decked out in really cool skulls and crystals and had very dark vibes. Others were very colorful and a little bit silly. Some featured, you know, cartoon characters, and some were much more serious. Some were covered in dust and ashes and candle wax. It was great. I'm so excited, and every day more people are posting, and I'm really, really pumped. So if you want to share along with this, you can check out my website for all the details, which is at thefatfeministwitch.com, or use the hashtag HowRealWitchesDo on Instagram, Twitter, or in your blog or anywhere. And you can also email me and let me know where to find your entries if you see that I don't find them. I've been liking and commenting on all the stuff I find so far. All throughout the month of October, we see images of Halloween and Hollywood witches, really over-the-top stuff. So wouldn't it be great to balance that out with images of real witches and, you know, how they do? I think so. And I also think it will just add to the overall fun witchy vibe of this month and this season and this holiday. Let's shift our focus a little bit away from reality as it appears on social media and talk instead about another tool that people use to find the truth about our world. Science. This is a topic that comes up a lot on the show, especially lately because science and medicine have become more of a focus in my life, but that's made me question how these two belief systems coexist and even influence each other. In episode 34, Witches, Midwives, and Doulas, I talked a bit about how magic was once our main system of medicine. Before we had the scientific methods and the technology that we have today, people used magical means to cure diseases and to understand our bodies. When scientific medicine came along, magic became, you know, quackery. Our paradigm shifted. We went from living in a reality dominated by the belief in magic to one dominated by the belief in science. The two became and remained fully separated. Sort of. Now, I'm not complaining. Y'all, the Earth is round. We evolved from amoebas and goo. Vaccines are good, and for the most part, so are antibiotics. And I don't think I'd go so far as to say antidepressant medication is great, now that I'm on it. Because, like, shit, doctors can't even tell you how or why it actually works. But I know that there are a lot of people who would not be here without it, myself included. I personally have never, ever struggled to believe in both magic and science. I don't believe everything, of course. I'm still a relatively skeptical witch. But the difference is that I really want to believe. I'm a little Fox Mulder, have been since I was a child. And wanting to believe really makes all the difference because it means I don't confine what I consider or take as proof to the same standards that science does. I don't need to see it in a form that makes sense with our current scientific way of thinking. I'm sure a lot of you feel the same way. When I first started practicing with a pagan group, we all talked about what led us to decide we were pagans. And one member said that he was interested in spirituality for a long time, but that as a kind of rational person, he struggled and he needed to find a spiritual path that had room for science in it and room for him to believe both. And his particular pagan path that he had found was one of the few that offered that to him and also hit all of the, you know, the spiritual check marks. And that was exactly how I felt. One of the things I so loved about witchy religions like Wicca and paganism was that I got to set my own limits, my own beliefs, my own practices. I decided what I believed in. I created my own religious path based on available info and dogma and my own feelings and experiences. And for me, there's always been room for both science and magic. A lot of spiritual or religious people don't believe in science. They don't vaccinate, they might not believe in evolution, and many don't believe in Western medicine at all. And I mean, that's your choice. There are a lot less of those people in magical circles, I find, than in other religions, but they're definitely still there. What's really interesting are the people who've combined magic or spirituality and science into one whole philosophical worldview. You've probably heard the word metaphysical before, metaphysics. I'm pretty sure I've used it on the show. Metaphysics isn't actually a branch of physics as we understand it, but of philosophy. Metaphysics is the study or the contemplation of issues like being, existence, life purpose, reality, all of that stuff. Some famous metaphysicists, which is a fun and horrible word to say out loud, you might recognize are Plato, Aristotle, Galileo, Earth is round, I told you. And more recently, there's also Isaac Newton with the gravity, the apple, and Immanuel Kant, whose name you actually might have heard recently in The Good Place. By the way, if you're not watching The Good Place, you absolutely need to start. It's kind of a comedy, but it's really about philosophy and the afterlife and morals and ethics. It's so great. Ted Danson's in it, and he's just wonderful. Isaac Newton was even a known occultist and a spiritualist. He was a member of the Theosophical Society. Newton's discovery of the properties of gravity is said to be the beginning of the end for magic and the start of the more rational worldview. And Isaac Newton is, you know, the rational mind. And I bet that kind of bums him out. I think he's less the first truly rational thinker and maybe the last of the truly magical metaphysicists. Metaphysics, which combines like these philosophical and magical concepts, along with some kind of interesting interpretations of things like quantum physics, is very, very popular with the New Age movement, and it has been since the 1960s. Though I think it's safe to say it's existed since Newton himself, but I digress. I personally am not totally about it. I don't really need science to explain magic to me. I have faith. But I don't begrudge those who ascribe to these beliefs at all. In fact, I think it's very interesting that we as people are trying to hold on to both systems of belief. We ditched magic for science, but now we can't just ditch science because it's proven things to our senses. We can't ignore what we've seen and felt and smelled and tasted and heard. So if we can't let go of magic, and now we can't let go of science, they must both be a little bit right. Right? Right? In 1975, Fritjof Capra, in his book The Tao of Physics, An Exploration of the Parallels Between Modern Physics and Eastern Mysticism, said, "Science does not need mysticism, and mysticism does not need science, but man needs both." And I firmly agree. At the beginning of the episode, I asked you to consider whether or not magic is real. Did you come up with an answer? Yeah. I know it's a bigger answer than just yes or no. For some of you, might have said, yeah, it's real, or no, it's definitely not, right away. But even those of you who still haven't quite decided, you might know which way you lean. The difficulty with this question isn't actually with the concept of magic or fantasy, but in the concept of reality. What is real? How do we know if something is real? In science, we put our faith in the scientific method. We propose a hypothesis and then we conduct experiments. We observe the results and they either prove or disprove our hypothesis. Then that whole situation has to be recreated. You don't just do a single experiment, you do multiple experiments. If you can't recreate the same or similar results, you haven't proved anything. And unfortunately, we as humans have really locked ourselves in to this very narrow definition of real. If it can't be seen, smelled, touched, heard, or tasted, it ain't real. Emotions, intuition, ESP, these are all joked and called a sixth sense. None of these can be used as evidence of whether or not something is real. If we apply the scientific method to magic, then the firm results are that it's absolutely not real, not real at all. There is no definitive, quantifiable proof that magic is real, that we can cast spells or sense vibes or see into the future. There's no proof. None. So I ask again, is magic real? And furthermore, does it matter? Woo! Existential crisis time, y'all. So if you're thinking, oh my God, magic isn't real, and that matters to me, I've devoted all my time and energy into something that isn't real. Oh no. Oh my God. Relax. And consider that some of the most important things in our lives and in our world and in our reality are just not real. For example, love. You cannot apply the scientific method to love, any kind of love. You can't touch love and hold it in your hands. You can't smell it or taste it. And you might say, but Paige, I can see love when I see a couple kissing, and I can hear it when they say, I love you. And guess what, friend? That's not real either. Those people might not even be in love. You could be watching a performance. They could be lying. It could be a play. You can see and hear two people who've never spoken before profess their love to each other for laughs, and you can feel it in your heart. You can feel the love, even though it's not there. In your mind and body, it is. And yet we still believe. We believe we love our parents, our spouses, our lovers, our friends, our children, our friends. When we fall in love, we'll say things like, I know I'm in love and it's for real for sure. And all of our proof of that is emotional and philosophical. Only we can really tell that it's there and it's real. Sometimes we don't even know if it's real. So now, just to recap, not only is magic not real, but neither is love. I know. What the fuck, Paige? But again, I ask, does it matter? If real, true love was something that you could see under a microscope, what would change? People would still fall in love. People would still perform love. People would still be confused about love. Nothing would really change. Love is love is love. And we as humans will continue to feel it and fall prey to it and let it nourish us or destroy us, whether or not it's real. The hardest to swallow pill in the whole of our existence, I think, is that none of this is real. Or maybe it is. We don't know. We don't know. Science thinks it has the answers, and magic thinks it has the answers, and the two rarely collide. And when they do, both sides will try and distance themselves from the whole situation. And that's simply because we're afraid. We want to matter. We want to be real. But we're not real. None of this is real. Reality is something we created. We defined what is real, and we defined how to figure out what is real, and yet there's still so much we don't understand. So many unreal things that happened every second of every day. Science does not need mysticism, and mysticism does not need science, but man needs both. We have to live in this reality with this confusion without knowing for sure, because that's really just the nature of the human condition, as far as we understand. I mean, we don't have complete control. Not everyone's brains even have the capacity to even guess what might be real or not real. But we have the free will to decide and deduce for ourselves what is real and isn't. What a tremendous gift. It's never bothered me that people say, yeah, well, magic isn't real and crystals aren't real. Science doesn't have any proof, and like that crystal can't really heal you. That's okay. You know what? Whatever, man. It's real to me. And in this reality, I am able to experience things that are not real all the time. And yet they have a very real effect on me. And that's really just enough. Whew. We got a little heavy there in the middle, didn't we? So let's get a little bit more practical. While I was working in metaphysical stores, I got a lot of questions like, okay, but is this crystal energy stuff actually real? But the whole negative ions thing with the salt lamps, is that for real? Can you really predict the future with tarot cards? And of course, I mean, technically, my objective there was to sell things. But in my heart, I really wanted to find ways to make these things real for people who needed a different explanation. And I found one, the brain. Actually, the brain found that explanation and told me about it through my brain. It's wild. Our brains are the weirdest and most magical and technologically advanced things on this planet. It's just wild. Your brain genuinely is doing stuff you don't know about all day and all night, all the time. The placebo effect, for example, completely shifts the way we perceive reality. In clinical trials for new medications, some subjects receive actual medication, while another group receives what is called a placebo. A pill with no real effectiveness. It does nothing. It's sugar or whatever. And yet, time after time, some of those who take the placebo have very real effects that we can measure via the scientific method, that we can see and smell and touch and taste and whatever. And this is possible simply because that person believes that it will happen. And if that's not magic, I don't know what it is. And so I started to realize that while some people were able to decide that all of this stuff was real based on totally unreal things like emotions and vibes, a lot of people, as much as they wanted to, just couldn't. They couldn't make that connection. These people needed science to merge with the magic and create a more holistic system for their life, a whole system. Crystals are magical for, I mean, a whole bunch of reasons. Read any book and you'll get a million different reasons. But the most universal is just because they exude a certain energy. That's the basic reason. Some people are very sensitive to this energy. When they hold a crystal, it elicits a change in them that they can see and feel and all of those things. It's an energy that comes from the stone and enters into their body. Whether it's their physical body or their energetic body, it comes from the stone and enters into them. When they buy crystals or when they visit a crystal shop, they can hear humming or feel vibrations or changes in temperature. It's really, really cool. But I'll be honest, that ain't me. I mean, I absolutely feel some things for sure. But not every crystal gets that response. And sometimes I physically feel nothing. Nothing. But looking at or holding the crystal still affects me. There's no physical quantifiable change there, but I am still affected by the crystal. And this is because of my brain, my lovely brain. My brain reacts to things like the color of the stone, the shape and the feel of it, and it assigns a feeling or emotion to that. Sometimes it's nostalgic and based on my memories or experiences. Sometimes it's just because the color makes me think of a particular thing. Maybe it's the design. For example, sodalite. Sodalite has these lines, these striations that look like lightning. And a lot of people talk about sodalite as a stone that can help ease anxiety. And to me, lightning does not ease anxiety. And so my associations with sodalite, I find, are a little bit different than they usually are in a lot of books. And it's just because, to me, when I see that, this feeling in my brain that comes is not, okay, calm down. It's, all right, let's do some shit. It's different. So I associate the crystal with certain feelings and experiences, and I still often use the accepted information or magical facts about the crystal when I hold, and when I hold it or I keep it with me, it triggers all those same things in my brain. It brings me back to that moment. It puts me into the frame of mind that I need to be in to do whatever it is I need to do with the crystal. It's like a cue card or a memory aid, but sparkly and magical. And that was a way that I found to explain crystals to people that really couldn't wrap their mind around these kind of extrasensory perceptions of crystals. They were like, you know what? You're right. This particular crystal is meant to help me calm down. Meant to help me stop and think more clearly before I speak. And so when I hold it and when I look at it, if I'm about to blow up, I'll think, oh, wait, this crystal is going to help me express myself in a more useful way. And so you will, because you've been reminded, your brain has been triggered. You're in a different frame of mind now, thanks to the crystal. And that could be that crystal is exuding a magical energy at you, or it could be that it triggered something in your brain. Cool, right? The color of your crystal is an especially important one of these triggers in your brain. Color, I am so sad to say, is another one of those things that is absolutely not real. I know. Every single human sees colors differently, thanks to our eyes and brains. Sometimes it's kind of obvious stuff like color blindness. I had a friend who was red-green colorblind, and instead what she saw was differing shades of brown. And other times it's not quite so obvious. You know, is the dress blue or gold? Is that red or is it pink or is it maybe orange? You can argue with your friend that a purple thing is actually blue until you're blue in the face and you're both right. It's because we all see colors differently. From species to species, I mean, animals see colors differently than we do. We see colors differently, all of that. And it's been proven that seeing certain colors stirs emotions inside us. Like crimson red is very aggressive and it can make us angry. Or light blue is very calming and tranquil. And we use this information to decide what color to paint rooms or what outfits to wear. And in magic, we use those emotions to dictate what each color means magically. If you want to attract money, use a green or a gold candle because they signify prosperity and abundance. So does the color green magically attract that certain energy or even just straight up attract money? Or does it work because you personally associate green with money? While that candle is burning, do you find your brain going, okay, now my spell's working. Let's keep this energy going. You know, I'm going to redo my resume. I'm going to go job hunting. I'm going to start a business. I'm going to buy a lottery ticket. Yeah. It's commonly accepted by almost all witches that you can't just cast a spell and sit back and fall. You know, you can't just wait. You have to follow up with action. I think it's just as real that the reason the green candle works is because it elicits that response and inspires you to take action. And I think that's just as realistic as to say that it works because green is magical and it attracts money. I think both things can be real at the same time. I don't think you need to believe both. And I think no matter which one you believe, you can still be practicing magic. Tarot is another big one. Oh, it's so big. Is predicting the future really possible with tarot cards or any system of divination? I don't know. Is every single card that you pull magically connected to the story of the universe? Or, you know, catching a trailer for a future event on this card? Who knows? For me, personally, most of the time, the cards themselves are cards. They're paper. They're gorgeous artwork that I connect with on an emotional level. I don't connect to every single tarot deck. I connect to a few. But the part of tarot, of reading tarot cards that is actually magic, is me. I tap into my intuition, my own magical energy, and use that to select a card. My intuition is inside me. It's a part of my brain and my chakra system and whatever else. It's an inner power. So that card that I pull is something that my intuition and my brain told me I needed to see or consider. Then my interpretation is another facet of that. I mean, I could absolutely get the message wrong. I totally could. Someone told me once that I was relying too much on tarot cards for messages, that it's possible for me to, for example, get an entire email of messages that's paragraphs and paragraphs. But when I look at the tarot cards, what I'm actually getting is just a tweet. And I thought that was a really good way to explain that. I can totally miss the point. And that doesn't mean that the card is not magical. It means that, you know, it's my brain. It's the way I'm perceiving things. I often find myself thinking of the cards not in terms of some esoteric kind of magical item, but more as a tool I use to communicate with myself or, you know, with others. Just because a card has an accepted meaning, that doesn't mean that that's what that card means for me. And that lets me know that that energy is not coming out of that card. The energy that tarot, you know, stirs up is in me. I can see and interpret something wildly different than you in a single tarot card from the same deck. We can see completely different things. Because our brains and feelings and experiences color that. And that, to me, is all still magic. And I'll tell you, I still sold a lot of stuff. This helped a lot of people. Palm stones are a very helpful kind of thing. Holding on to things to spark your memory or to get you to think certain things. Memory aids have been around for as long as human beings have been thinking. So isn't it just as important as magic? These memory aids aren't frivolous. They're something that human beings use to communicate with ourselves, with our brains, with our thoughts, with our feelings. And that's what magic is. I know. Congrats for sitting through the episode. Honestly, it's a little bit confusing. But the truth is, magic, science, reality, these aren't separate and unrelated concepts. These are all belief systems that we've created to help us understand the world and ourselves. Science doesn't have all the answers, and neither does magic. And I believe that to seek the truth, however you frame that, by the way, truth isn't real either. You need to be open to both science and magic. You need to look at both. Otherwise, you're only getting half the story. It might not even be half. It might be one-fifth or one-third. Who knows what's out there? The coolest thing about that is that science and magic are both changing all the time. Scientists and witches are constantly discovering new ways of looking at and living in the world, and there's always more out there to discover. None of this is static. Energy isn't static. It's constantly moving. And to truly be at one with each other and with the world, the planet, the universe, we need to be able to move with it. Science does not need mysticism, and mysticism does not need science, but man needs both. Thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode of the Fat Feminist Witch podcast. For the record, I think magic is real, but I also don't think that matters very much. If you like the show, I would love it if you would subscribe and review the show on iTunes or whatever platform you're using, and visit me online at thefatfeministwitch.com and on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, and let me know. Is magic real? What do you think? If you want to share your very real witchy practice online with the rest of us, you can find the information about this witchcraft without a filter challenge on my website or by searching the hashtag HowRealWitchesDo on Instagram and other social networks. Then you can use the tag to share and connect with other real witches like me. If you want to financially support the show, which I'm very grateful for, and me, there are also lots of ways that you can do that. You can go to my website and click Buy Me a Coffee. You can join The Witch and Bitch, which is my private monthly membership group, for $10 a month by going to patreon.com/thefatfeministwitch. And if you are a witchy business owner, artist, creator, service provider, or author, and would like to advertise your services or your products on the show, you can find more information about that at advertisecast.com/thefatfeministwitch. And I also have some information on my website. Of course, you can always send me an email at fatfeministwitch@gmail.com. Like I said earlier, all month long, I will be talking about real witchcraft. And on October 25th, my third annual Very Fat Feminist Halloween special will be available on Podbean and iTunes. And I will be talking about some ancient witch tools that seem more fantasy than reality, but do have a place in our modern practices. Satanic witches, the stereotype that everyone was trying to get away from. What are satanic witches and why are they so important right now? Shopping for genuine witchcraft items in the Halloween aisle, which is fun. And I'm doing another Silver Screen Spellcraft segment and talking about all of the very real magic and witchcraft in Anna Biller's horror film, The Love Witch. It's going to be a really fun, no doubt very long episode now that I look at my list of things. So I hope you all have a very fun and spooky rest of the month. And don't worry, of all the things real and unreal in this world, there is one thing that I'm sure exists. Halloween!